It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. One of these days, I'm going to forget the name of this. What is the name of the show? Midwest Outdoors, you know. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. I've got withdrawals. I didn't get to go fishing last week because I chose not to because of the cold weather.
You're a wimp.
Yeah, I am. But, man, I'm getting tired of this wind blowing. Wow, and it's windy out there this morning.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough out there on the water today.
Yes, it is.
But it's not near as cold as I think that they were talking about. It's supposed to get cold tonight, down in the 20s tonight.
Yeah, maybe record lows.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
You know, turkey season starts on Monday. It's going to be allegedly around my area up here around about 20, 21, 22, 23 years old, 23 years old, 23 degrees.
You wish.
Yeah, really. And, boy, I got thinking about it on the way down here. I think I'll go about 10 o'clock, you know, because it's going to warm up to 53, they say.
Not quite the crack of noon.
But. No, getting close. And so it's going to be, they'll start gobbling about 10, 10:30. And if you can get one to gobble about that time, he's pretty gobbleable. He's wanting a girlfriend pretty bad.
Just not going to do it early with that cold weather?
Don't think so unless some kind of form of motivation hits me. I got to tell you what happened to me this week. It's been the week from hell. And it just everything I touched broke or went apart, you know, on the deal. But the guys to my east are trying to raise, there's a swamp over there. And so it's so dry, it's the first time it probably dissed that swamp in 20 years.
Wow.
And so I told them I'd help them put in about 4 or 5 acres of corn over there on the thing. Well, we all showed up and they disc around the patch and then you set it on fire, you know, and then you disc another patch, you set it on fire. Well, the fire jumped, the wind, there was no wind. The minute that match hit the ground, or lighter, whatever they used, it hit the ground and that fire wind came up and woof, across that bottom it went.
Uh-oh.
And here we go, we got flame shooting 30 yards in the air.
Oh, gosh.
Place had probably hadn't been burned in 20 years. And we 911 the volunteer fire department up there. Those guys came within 20 minutes. Now, this is out in the middle of Thule's. They worked their butts off and put that fire out. And I stand there thinking about, these are all volunteers.
Wow.
Yeah, had to leave their family, had to leave their jobs, come show up out there in the middle of nowhere, and just worked like there was no tomorrow.
How do you put a fire out like that?
Well, they got a huge fire truck with a big sprayer pumper on the back of it, and a guy stand up with mask. It's a dirty, nasty, hard job. And these are volunteers.
Hmm.
And I was so proud of them. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I don't know what the locals up there would do. We don't have, you know, there's not enough revenue to have a full-time fire department. And they came up there and worked and worked and worked and worked. Finally jumped over on my field and started the levee on fire, and they stayed until they got it all out.
Hmm. Isn't that something?
And I appreciate those guys more. You know, I guess, I don't know if I just took them for granted or just don't think about it as much, but until you need them, you know, kind of like when you need a cop, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you wish they were there,
right.
And they show. And, boy, my hat's off to those guys. So next time you see a volunteer fireman, whether he's at Lathrop or wherever, Mound City, these guys are out of Mound City, at least buy him lunch. You know, that's a dangerous, dirty job.
Well, you were telling me about a farmer that burning off his field this past week and wound up being killed.
Yeah.
Wow.
And got caught in it and couldn't get back out of it because, you know, the winds are so erratic this time of year. You could light a match, and 5 minutes later, you got 20-mile-an-hour wind, you know.
Right.
And it got him. It burned him up. And just a bad, bad deal. And so I appreciate the Mound City Fire Department and all the guys that worked their tail off to help us put that fire out. Because if it would have got across the levee, it would have burned for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Went all the way down through there. And I was talking to them after they'd getting ready to leave, and they said, boy, if we just had one of those 6x6, you know, those Polaris 6x6, that tank in it,
you'd
get around a lot better and put out fires a lot quicker. And I got thinking, you know, there's probably somebody's got one, you know, that had one for years, sitting in their garage. They can write it off. Why don't they give it to the Mound City Fire Department, the Volunteer Fire Department up there, and they put a tank in it and a pump and...
Wow, that could make a big difference.
Yeah, or if nothing else, how about writing them a check? You know, they're always strapped for money. Yeah, I think they had two or three trucks, and one or two of them was in the hospital, you know, getting repaired. And I just tip my hat to those kind of people that volunteer like that. You know, they get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's 10 below zero, and that's when a house seems to burn down.
Naturally.
And they just show up.
And you volunteer. That's
volunteer.
Crazy.
Leave their family. Leave that warm bed. You know, go out there and
put yourself in harm's way.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous. People just don't understand how dangerous that is. I mean, they're out there, and these guys are trained semi. You know, basically trained themselves by putting these, so many of them out. But you know, it's been such a drought; everything is just a tinder. You know, you drop a match, it'll jump 50 feet in 5 minutes, and that them bunch out of Mound City or South Holt, Oregon, Missouri, those guys. I know a lot of these guys, you know, they're just volunteer fire department, no money, do it because they're good humans. Man, that we need more people.
No kidding.
When you lose faith in mankind, they hear these guys show up.
Yeah,
I mean,
very cool.
They couldn't have rode in with a white horse and looked any better, you know, and didn't argue, didn't complain, just went about their work, and the only thing I could do was thank them.
Yeah.
And just wonderful, wonderful people, so... You know, there's still some good humans around.
Yeah, good story.
Yeah, and you know, you hear all these negative stories in the news and all that stuff. What about some positive stuff?
Yeah.
You know, man bites dog. You know, dog bites man, you know, whatever. Turkey season, you know, coming up, and every year we talk about this, and I want to talk about it, and we talked about it briefly last Saturday.
Right.
And by the way, poor old Rudy doesn't understand this, but after the show is over, we'll take calls. If you don't want to be on the air, which I understand that, or if you want to learn something, or maybe we can answer a question for you. Mark took a call last week, one of the nicest guys.
Yeah, he sure was.
And Mark just bent over backwards to help him. The guy wanted to know where he'd catch some fish, so I know it'll upset Rudy, but that's... Rudy gets upset over nothing. He's a Kentucky boy.
Well, he's had 2 weeks off. He got to sleep in the last 2 weeks, so back to reality now.
Yeah, reality. Shockwave has hit him.
And
this thing.
They don't have to wait till after the show. They can call it. And we never do give the phone number. No, but it is 913-3810-810 if you would like to join us on air.
Yeah, so what the hey. But turkey season is a wonderful sport. Gives me more adrenaline rush than anything I do. You know, when that old turkey comes in spitting and drumming and gobbling, I don't care who you are. You know, boy, I took a guy one time, I probably shouldn't mention his name, professional football player. And turkey came up over the hill, and the sun ray came through the timber, and that red, white, and blue, and that gold shining on that bird. And
nothing
in that
like
gun
it.
Barrel looked like he was directing the Philadelphia Philharmonics. It was just shaking. And I said to him, I said, were you this nervous at the Super Bowl? And he said, no.
That's cool.
Really cool.
Now, Monday is opening day, and with the cold weather, do you know what the most common call that the male turkeys are going to be using is?
Male turkeys don't call. They just gobble, Mark.
Well, it's
okay, all right. I'll bite.
Okay.
What is it?
Quack, quack, quack.
Really? That is a bad joke. I knew Kelly just texted before it went on the air, Kelly Kurtz, and he said to have Mark tell a joke. And I said, he has no good jokes.
You know. Do you know what you call a turkey that runs?
Scared.
Fast food.
Don't go there.
I'm sorry.
I don't need that. Too early in the morning for this kind of nonsense. This season here, of course, everything's delayed. Except I suppose southern Missouri is pretty greened up. We got a lot of listeners down around the Springfield area. But this is a very dangerous time. And we talk about it every spring. And probably about a week from today, I'll walk in here and there'll be somebody that's been shot.
Yep.
Majority of the time, it's self-inflicted, you know, crossing a fence around a vehicle, loading, unloading guns. That's generally when the majority of these happen. But every once in a while, somebody thinks, well, I saw movement, I saw something, and I shot. You know, we had Bob Lockett on, and Bob was shot. He was wearing an orange sweater walking through the woods, Texas shirt, T-shirt, or wrapped around his neck. It was hot. And the guy thought it was turkey and saw movement and croaked him. And if it wouldn't have been for Life Flight just happened to be around, he'd been dead.
Yeah.
You know, they really whacked him. And shooting this buffer copper shot is the worst thing I think you can do. I think we ought to make everybody hunt with 410s. But it's the worst thing you can have is 3.5-inch guns. They'll shoot clean through you at 70 yards. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've got two holes to leak out of, and you're probably going to die.
Yeah, you got to make sure you know what you're shooting at.
So many people lose their eyesight during the turkey season, not only here in Missouri, Pennsylvania, all over the place, you know, New York. And there's only one time you're allowed to pull the trigger, and that's when you see the beard on the front of the wild turkey. And they've got weird colors, red, white, and blue, and black. And one guy shot a guy, he was walking, had on red, white, and blue socks, you know, sat down against a tree and saw the red, white, and blue, had the tube socks on, you know, used to be kind of the rage, and croaked and shot him. And I did an interview one time with a gentleman who had shot and killed his barber. And he cried and I cried. His family was there, they all cried. Completely destroyed his life, completely ruined him. And I always tell this story, and I know everybody's getting tired of hearing it, but I was at Cameron, Missouri, filling up with gas one day, and that's back when we were doing a TV show, and he had the American Outdoorsman on the side of the pickup truck, and a guy saw me, and I saw him point at me, and you could tell he was a farmer, had the hay fork sticking on the back of a ton truck. And I saw him lean out the window and point at me as he went by, which was kind of, I thought maybe it was somebody giving me an obscene gesture, but it wasn't. But they turned around and they came back, and the guy said, you're Fred Ramsey. And I said, yeah. He said, always wanted to meet you, and we should talk for a little bit. And he said, you saved my life. And I said, how in the heck did I ever save a life? And he said, well, he said, my uncle and me, we hunt together a lot. And that was the guy that was with him. And he said, he sat down, and we had turkey gobbling. He was supposed to be on the other ridge, but he heard this gobbler fire so many times, he came over and was hunting right beside me. We didn't know it. And he sat down, and when he sat down, that's where the tube sock thing came in. He said he saw the red, white, and the blue. His pants, he had camouflage pants on. They came up as he sat down on the ground. He said that turkey was spitting and drumming and gobbling right there in front of me, but it was so thick and so green that year. And he said, I snapped the safety off and mounted the gun. I didn't realize that was my uncle. I could have swore it was that turkey's head. And he said, about that time, that turkey lit a cigarette. He said, it scared me so bad. And I said, well, you mean we saved your uncle's life? And he said, no. He said, if I'd have shot and killed him, I'd have shot and killed myself.
Well, he was waiting to see the beard.
Yeah. And he said, I heard you say on the air one time, you cannot pull the trigger till you see the beard on the front of the wild turkey. And that sunk into his brain, thank goodness. And he didn't do it. But so all the years that I've been on the air now for 30-some years, that right there was the most rewarding moment of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, and I thanked him, and he said, no, I'm going to thank you.
Wow.
Kind of deal. It was very emotional. Mm-hmm. And so you got to be careful out there. You know, the Great Deer War, there's always somebody gets shot, yeah, although that's gone way down since the mandatory hunter orange. But it's getting around a pickup truck, crossing a fence, unloading your gun, loading your gun, that kind of thing. And a lot of guys just pick up a gun about one time a year, and that's to go turkey hunting. It's a very destructive thing you've got in your hand, a very dangerous thing. So what I'm trying to pass on to everybody is please, please be exceptionally careful out there this spring. Have a ball, but be very, very careful. We are brought to you by Highway Trailer Sales. Did you get a hold of Terry Lee yesterday?
Not yet. No, I'm going to try to do that Monday.
Mark is going to, you need a trailer, huh?
I think I need a couple of trailers.
Well, this is the guy. If he can't get you one or whatever, he'll help you get you one. And if you ever have to have a repair, this is the ultimate guy to have. I know an awful, now that he's become a sponsor, whenever those grain trailers pass me on I-29 or wherever it is, I take a look at them now and try to get names off of them and that kind of stuff. But I know of several people that have rolled those with during the harvest. You know, you're busy and you get moving too fast, and sometimes you hire people that drive them that are not maybe the most proficient people in the world, and so they'll run them off in the ditch or roll them over. Well, if that's your case, if you need a trailer, I don't care whether it's brakes, bearings, or the top is caved in on it, this is the guy. I've never, ever been around anybody. I met him for 10 minutes, felt like I'd known him for 20 years. He's an honest, sincere guy. The whole people, the staff there, his secretary didn't like me, but other than that, everything is fine. She hung up on me. Did I tell you about that?
No.
Yeah. She was trying to put me on hold. She said, yeah, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah, what the heck. But Highway Trailer Sales Incorporated, Terry Lee is the president. They're here in North Kansas City, basically across from Worlds of Fun, straight west of Worlds of Fun. It's called 1850 Southern Road in Kansas City, Missouri. I'll give you a phone number, and I hate doing this because phone numbers generally don't work too well when you're talking on the radio, but it's an 816 area code, which is real easy, but 483-3676. That guy is phenomenal, and that whole family. We've got to take that boy his fishing.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to go bad, bad. So Highway Trailer Sales over here on 1850 Southern Road. So please stop by, see these humans. You're going to be tickled to death. I don't care what kind of trailer you got, they can fix it. We've got to take a little bit of a break. We're going to talk a little fishing. Who else we got?
And we've got Teresa Maybriar coming on, where this is take two. We tried this 2 weeks ago, and she had a bad cell phone connection. So she's driving up on top of a hill, and we're going to talk about the upcoming morel mushroom season.
You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, with my co-host, Mark Tobin. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, here with my co-host, Mark Tobin. We're going to get Teresa on, and we're going to talk some mushrooms here in a minute. We're going to talk a little fishing. We are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, King City, Missouri, the ultimate people to build your building. If you've not gone to their website, kingcitylumber.com, use your imagination, but you'll be on there for 20 minutes. But anything you can conceive in your brain, they can build. They're master carpenters. They're the finest humans to walk upright. They'll come to your house, give you a bid. And remember this, they are master carpenters. They're not slam dunks, throw it in the ground, get out of there and go to the next job. If you're not happy, they're not happy. They are the finest building people that I've ever been around. They built my building, they built my neighbors, they built everybody around, and they've got such a reputation of being squeaky clean. They're fine, fine humans. King City Lumber Company, kingcitylumber.com. They're up in King City, Missouri. I always say Kings. It's King City, Missouri, home of Roger Worley. That mean anything to you? Roger Worley, the all-pro defensive back from St. Louis Rams, I think.
It was the Rams back then, yeah.
But anyway, King City Lumber Company. Great humans. You'll like Marty and Monty. They're just the finest people that you'll ever deal business with. KingCityLumber.com.
Cool.
Catch any fish? No, you didn't get to go.
No, I didn't get to go, but there are fish being had, and it's getting close to that time that crappie are thinking about spawning. So there are some fish available up shallow, but still a surprising amount of fish that are being caught deep. And a brother-in-law of mine was out couple of days ago on Lake of the Ozarks and catching fish in 20 foot of water. I've heard some people on Truman catching them in 20 foot of water, maybe 15 feet down, sometimes right on the bottom. But then on the other hand, there's fish being caught up right up on the bank too. But you know, these spring can be a very frustrating time to fish for crappie, well, to fish for anything. And you know, they get spawning on their mind, and they get up there in that shallow water, which is what most fishermen wait for. You know, they're easy to catch, and you can find them relatively quick, but you get any kind of a cold front, it's, oh my gosh, I can't eat today. The water temperature changed a degree, and they just shut off, or they'll move out to deeper water, and it's just more difficult to find them. And it, you know, with the fronts that come in and out in the spring, it can be an extremely frustrating time of year to fish for them. But it's better to go out and try than not.
Yeah.
But there are some a lot of fish being caught right now. That's still several weeks away from them spawning. The ones that I've heard that are getting caught, none of the males that I've heard are starting to get any spawning colors. And, you know, the male crappie has a hormone that triggers them to turn a dark color. I assume to make them a little bit more. You had that. You are getting darker.
Yes, I am.
It's all about mating, trying to make you look, I think, more attractive.
Yeah,
it ain't working, Fred.
It ain't working.
No. But still a few walleye being caught down below Truman. Some nice ones. Saw a picture of one that was a little over 11 pounds that got caught this week. And somebody, and I don't know how much this would weigh, but had one that was 31 inches that I saw a picture of, and another one 28 inches. Again, I don't know how much that weighs, but that's a good size fish.
Picture weighed 3 pounds.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's just one here and one there. It's not fast action kind of stuff, but there's some really nice ones being caught. And the catfish, blue cats are up there. The blue cats are biting really good right now. And the white bass are up there down below the dam. But,
Have the conservation been up there and shocked? Have you talked to any of those guys?
I have not, but that's usually done around the middle of March.
Mm-hmm.
So that should have been done quite a while ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard to say. It's such
a
weird spring.
Well, and the water's been so cool.
They might have to hold off a little bit.
They might have. The water's been so cool. And, I mean, there's still some water in the upper 40-degree range. It should be in the 50s, if not close to the low 60s right now.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy spring.
Got a text from Kelly Kurtz, and he said, got sunburned today and snow tomorrow.
Isn't that crazy?
And it is. You think about that. That's so bizarre. You know, it's just
in middle of April.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. It just.
Well, we had snow, measurable snow last week at my house, enough that I was able to make the first batch of snow ice cream for my son.
Oh, isn't that good?
My son loves snow ice cream.
Yeah.
And we haven't had a snow big enough to have any snow ice cream this whole winter until the beginning of April, and then all of a sudden we get a snow that I can make snow ice cream.
I don't know. You know, it's going to be a weird turkey season. You know, the gobblers are standing with a still with a flock of hens. I did see two hens out kind of stumbling around, so that means they're looking for nest sites yesterday. I've been driving a lot and looking for a lot of turkeys and just not seeing the birds up in the northwest. I went to three different counties up there where I always kind of mess around with, and just don't see the birds on the deal. I just don't know if they're back in the timber or there just isn't any. You know, just zones of them that don't seem like there's just too many birds around.
Did you see the numbers of the youth season?
I didn't see them. I was going to look, too, and I forgot to.
It was way off last year. But, you know, a lot of that was probably due to the weather.
Oh,
because it was just so cold. And, you know, a lot of kids don't want to go out in that kind of weather.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them.
Probably more the weather than it was the lack of birds. But, I'm seeing quite a few going down, you know, Lake of the Ozarks down that way, mid-Missouri and on there. And some big bunches. Now, this was three weeks ago, but I came across one field, and I'll guarantee you, there had to have been 150 or 200 birds in that field.
Wow.
And that late into the season, them
flocked up. It shouldn't be like that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, that's a challenge bunch of birds. You're not going to call them away from a real McCoy. You know, they're standing there looking at the hen. You're up over the hill yelping at them. But if you're really turkey hungry, a little tip I can give you is that about dark, they have a habit of gobbling when they go to roost, and you'll know exactly where they're at. Go down there and clap your hands and say, "Hey, what are you doing?" And get them all scattered. And you get a scare where they all fly one direction. That's not good. But if you get them scattered next morning, you hit the gull, more than likely he's got separated from his girlfriend, and he's going to come look.
Hmm.
So if you're really turkey hunting and you're really after it, it's what I used to do all the time. We had these late springs. I would go into the woods right about a half hour then before sunset, and you hear them fly up. They make such a racket when they fly up sometimes. Sound like timber's falling down. You know, such a big bird.
Yeah.
And go down there and I'd talk to them. Hey, if anybody was around, they'd say, "Well, he's gone off the edge again," you know. But the human voice scares turkeys worse than anything. And you clap your hands and holler at them. I walked right in underneath them, you know, and get them busted out of there. Next morning, you're in birds. They're separated. And they're gregarious. They want to be around another turkey. So, you know, it should be good. What about Richard Boland? Have you heard anything out of Richard? Keep changing subjects here, but.
Yeah, he's still hammering crappie. I mean, they're getting limits every day. I mean, sometimes twice a day with, you know, different sets of clients. But just saw a picture he posted yesterday, two limits, and they got him relatively quick. I mean, within just a couple of hours. He's on fire. Nobody can catch crappie on that lake like he can.
How's your boat running?
I just got it back. I just got it back from Sportsman's Outfitter Marine. I haven't got it back into the water yet, but got a new trolling motor on there, and they did my 32-point checkup that I like to have done every year. I told that story off of Facebook that the guy that his boat broke down at 10:30 at night and had to troll to a dock and got lost trying to find their car, and police came and helped them, and but people were looking at him like they'd been out on the they're like just they're scary looking, you know, been out on the water all day, got boat hair, you know, they look crazy, but. That could be avoided, that kind of stuff. If you don't, you got to make this a regular part of your maintenance. Just get out there to Sportsman's Outfitter Marine and let them do their annual check. It's like a 32-point check. But then you get out there on the water and you just rest assured that kind of thing is not going to happen. And because that's what happens is you just, you know, you put off the maintenance. Sure. It's just a hassle to have to take your boat to someplace. Sure. And you put it off until it's too late and then something happens. And boats are going to break down. That's why that's the way they're built.
Yep.
That's one thing you just like taxes. You can bank on taxes. You can bank on the fact that your boat's going to break down sooner or later. Well, when that day happens, yeah, remember them. Sportsman's Outfitter Marine. They're just a great bunch of folks down there. And when I walked in there yesterday to get my boat, I just love walking in there. I know they've probably gone nose dead, but when I walk in there, it's just a great smell. New
nose
boat smell.
Nose dead?
Well, yeah, it's the smells, you know?
Sound like you're from Kentucky.
Sorry.
Rudy, man. I'm sorry. You've been gone our producer's been gone for 2 weeks. I had nobody throw stones at. He's such a nice guy. He's so gullible. I mean, I don't know why he puts up with us.
I don't know.
But I don't either, you know. What the heck? We mean well.
Well, I do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder about you.
Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to have Teresa. We're going to talk to you mushroom season, which doesn't look good.
Well, right now it doesn't.
Boy. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We got to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back with you. What do you think of that call?
You can be such a turkey.
It's a call of double dead. I can't wait to get in the woods on Monday. I don't know if I can hold off to 10 o'clock that warms up or not. This is made by H.S. Strutt. It's got a big cut V in it. And I bought it because it had it in a package. And I didn't want the package. I wanted the 2.5 out of the middle of it. I think it was $9.89 for three of them or whatever it was. And this, I was going to throw it in the trash. And I thought, well, they'll throw it away. I'll yelp on it a little bit. And it's got that little whiny rasp in this thing. It's called a Double Dead H.S. Strutt Company. They ought to be ecstatic to hear this, but this is just the coolest darn turkey call I've ever put in my mouth.
It sounds pretty real.
It's really, really good, you know. And good turkey calling trumps all other problems. You know, it always amazes me that people go out there, get in the woods, you know, be in the woods about 6 o'clock, and sit down and don't move. You know, one is you're going to get blasted, but the other thing is that, you know, turkeys will come to you if you just have the patience of Job, you know, sit there.
Now, what if you're sitting there, and it just starts to get light, and you see morel mushrooms all around you? Then what do you do?
I've been there. Did that one time. I was over by Troy, Kansas, hunting, and I sat down, and there was morels, and the turkey was gobbling. And you know what I did? I left them, walked on by them, and went out and killed that gobbler. And I thought, well, I'll come back and pick these morels. And I was so close to the truck, about a half mile over this ridge, and I thought, well, I can go back and pick them mushrooms, or I can take an easy route with this 25-pound gobbler. And I took the 25-pound gobbler, went to the truck, and never did go back.
I would have never done that.
You know, that was a weird deal, too. And Teresa will probably know a little bit more about this, but this was in a burnt area. And there was mushrooms in this burnt leaves. I don't think I've ever seen it again or since, but there was quite a few on the darn thing. Teresa, how are you doing this morning? Uh-oh, I didn't get her punched up. That's my fault. Teresa, how are you doing this morning?
Do we have better reception this time?
No, you sound great. Yay! There she is. This is Mother Mushroom, for those of you that don't recognize her voice. She is the, in my opinion, the queen of mushrooms. Teresa May Breyer, thank you for getting up this morning and driving up top of the hill so we could have better reception. We tried to have you on a couple of weeks ago, and it was is that a turkey I hear back there?
Uh-huh.
That's you. Is that
That's
you?
Me. That was me.
I thought that was Teresa.
I have turkeys in my backyard. That's so fun.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever found mushroom in a burned area before?
I've gone out west and hunted professionally in burn areas.
What the deal?
It's a trauma that causes the underground organism to feel threatened. And out west where it happens in the big forests, it's the first thing that brings the forest back alive.
Hmm. Wow.
Because the mushrooms come up, the flies and the bugs come to the mushrooms, the birds come to the bugs, and so on and so on.
Hmm. Interesting.
A pattern.
Well, Teresa,
and
this...
the American Indians used to burn areas specifically to get mushrooms.
Well, I'll be darned.
But I don't recommend doing it.
Especially if there's a house nearby.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, you can get in a lot of trouble.
Well, this has been so far a crazy spring. It's been way cool this year. And so when it comes to the development of mushrooms, how does the weather affect this? Now, which is more important, having warm weather or moisture or both? And how does the dry weather and the cool affect our mushrooms?
Well, actually, the cool is good. And I don't know how broad your area is, but I'm down in Lebanon by Bennett Springs Park.
Cool.
And we had a beautiful thunderstorm. It rained all night long. I think most of central Missouri got it. It went all the way up the state. The moisture is important because they're over 80% water in a mushroom, just like us humans. And that makes them bigger, fuller, prettier mushrooms. But the cool air is actually better. So what will happen is the season hasn't technically started, not a main rush anyway. So used to be long years ago when the weather was dependable, you could pretty much count on tax day to be a good starting point for Kansas City proper. And we're not, you know, we're just there today or tomorrow. So this cool air is great because you might catch some of the early mushrooms getting into some blacks, not typical in the Kansas City area, but there are some up there. And then the half caps, which are the long stem, short capped ones, people call them other things and won't eat them. And I wouldn't either if I called them that, but they're delicious. And then your grays, you know, people say the little grays, well, little grays will grow into big grays if they're left alone to give time to grow. In the laboratory, it's about a 10-day period.
No kidding.
But out in nature, if you get a warm rain at night, they can quadruple in size.
Oh, my gosh, that quick.
Mm. Well, it's just, you know, outdoors, so many variables come into play, but they don't just pop out of the ground and show up.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You know, we had 3 days where it was in the upper 70s, maybe low 80s.
Yeah.
And but it's been fairly dry. But if you know, all of a sudden you walk outside and the lows were in the 60s, and it feels like spring all of a sudden. And I know that a lot of people felt like mushrooms had to have popped out of the ground overnight, because just some of the typical areas that I see along the highway, there were cars parked there, and I know exactly what they were doing. They were out scouting the woods, but.
Well, scouting is a nice word for not finding any. My nephew went out and last night up there for me, and he said, there's nothing happening yet. And I said, that's a good thing, because with this screwball weather jumping up and down, if they had started, they would just sit there in the ground, you know, and not grow. They can sit there for 2 weeks and not grow if the weather conditions aren't favorable.
That long. That's surprising to me.
Mm. And morels are one of the strangest organisms. They make it very complicated. And the whole reason people think they just pop up is because, you know, you can be walking along and not see them, take time to stop and turn around, and there they are, and you'll swear they just came right out of the ground. Well, your brain learns when you're growing up how to protect you when you walk. So only when you stop are you able to see all that little stuff. And that's how that whole thing got started.
Well, and I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, we talk about how kids sometimes seem to are able to find mushrooms better than us adults. And you talked about how we're looking for other things too, not
snakes.
Like, well, yeah. We got a whole lot of stuff on our minds anyway, paying bills, getting to work, you know, blah, blah, blah. But kids have a free mind, and they're just out there playing, and it's like an Easter egg hunt.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, they're lower to the ground, too.
Well, I'm pretty low to the ground myself, and I keep shrinking, so.
Vertically challenged, is that what they call that?
Yeah, exactly. 4'11".
What's the better eating one, the little grays, the big yellow ones? What, in your opinion, is the best eating one?
Well, it depends how you cook them. I prefer the blacks, the half caps, and the grays, to me, they have the best flavor. I saute mine pretty much just in butter and garlic and a little olive oil to keep the butter from burning. But for people who like to batter fry them or stuff them, then the big yellow ones are good. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I recommend to everybody is stop putting them in salt water. All it does is make them salty and breaks them down, makes them mushy.
Really?
Just clean them right before you cook them and slice them across the mushroom into ringlets, putting the stems in the pan first because they take longer to cook, and then the caps. And that way you're cooking inside and out. When they pop like bacon, that's when you know they're done.
Wow.
Well, what the heck? So we used to soak them in salt water because we thought that's the way to get the bugs out of them.
Well, you know what? When Grandma started doing this in the 70s, when all the elm trees started dying and morels were just abundant like crazy, you think about it, all Grandma knew was anything that came out of the woods, a bird, a bunny, a fish, was soaked in salt water.
Sure was. To her,
that was logical. And in some places in our country, they call morels dry-laying fish, particularly Kentucky. But when science came along and discovered all that did was break them down, you know, you wouldn't take your button mushrooms from the grocery store, your portobellos, and do that.
That's true.
Well, we didn't have those even in grocery stores back then. Mm-hmm. So it's a more recent food source for humans that we didn't have 50 years ago. So there's a lot more knowledge about them, and you do not soak them in salt water. Just clean them before you eat them.
So after you pick them, how do you store them?
We put ours in paper sacks, like the little lunch sacks, in batches of about half pounds, and they'll stay in the fridge like that, unless they're really soaking wet, for a good 4 or 5 days. If they're really wet, you should probably put paper towels between layers so they don't get mold on each other.
But better not to, and not even just plain water? Don't store them in the refrigerator in plain water? Keep them in a paper bag is better?
No. Hmm. Water's not a good thing for them.
All right.
And if they dry out a little bit, put them in the water to clean them before you start anything else. And by the time you get your pots and pans and all that done, they'll absorb the moisture they had when they were picked.
Hmm. Wow. Cool. Oh,
interesting.
Can you cook them and have them in July and August and just freeze them? Does that lose a lot of taste?
No, freezing's not a good thing. And if you think about it, there's no mushrooms sold in any grocery stores anywhere in the world frozen.
It's true.
It's the wrong science. It's just like tomatoes. They're too wet to be good in the freezer. And I don't know why, but I've talked to people who they'll dry their mushrooms, which is the way to store them, and then they'll put those in the freezer. Don't do that. That's craziness.
Hmm. Well, that doesn't make sense. Yeah.
No, just
dried.
A cool, dry place. You could keep them in paper sacks, except we have little critters in the Midwest that just love to eat them. So you can't really do it that way. We let ours get thoroughly dry, and after the season's over, then we'll sort them how we want to use them later on, and we'll put them in mason jars.
Is it true when you're picking mushrooms you should use a mesh bag? Does it really distribute spores that could
absolutely does.
Okay.
I can tell you tales of people who embarrass themselves because they'll get mad because their trails to their favorite spots now have mushrooms.
Really?
Mushrooms on
them. Kidding. Wow, that's cool.
Wow.
You know, the thing about it is we try to make this so complicated. And if you read my book, it's so easy to do all of these things that are beneficial to the mushroom. It's easy to dry them. If you dry them outdoors, you're putting spore out in your environment wherever you're drying them. So if it's on your land or in your backyard, you're still going to be producing mushrooms for the future. And it's easy and lazy. And
I like
you
that.
Have all your time for mushroom hunting. And then, you know, carrying the mesh bag, you don't have to shake them. You don't have to do anything special. You're just walking around the woods keeping your produce fresh. I think about the days before I knew this, and I carried them in those plastic bags. And if you're out there very long and it's warm, they just turn gross. And then you threw them in salt water, and they got real mushy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why anybody liked them back then.
Yeah, really. I remember going with my dad when I was a kid, and I reached down and picked a mushroom one day and pulled out the root wad and all the, you know, kind of.
It happens.
And he got on me so bad, he said, "Don't that leaving seed out there, son. Leave that stem, you know, broke off right top of the ground." Ain't true to that?
Well, yes and no. Here's the thing about that. We use knives, and I encourage everybody to cut them. If you don't disturb that underground organism, they only have a week maybe to reproduce. That's mm-hmm. the part of the mushroom. You know, it's the reproductive part.
Sure.
So you could go back to the same area 3 or 4 days later with the weather holding pattern, and there'll be more because they're trying to reproduce. They'll shoot up another one more quickly to try to get that job done. Out west, we picked a whole hillside one day, and out west where there's a burn, you see everything on the ground. We probably picked 300 to 500 mushrooms on this hill. Mm. We went back after, I think it was 3 or 4 days. There had been a couple of rains. That whole hillside was covered, and you could see where we cut the ones, and a couple of smaller ones were up.
Isn't that unreal? Wow, cool.
Unbelievable.
Your book is still available, is it not?
Yes, it's available at Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon.com. It's Morel Hunting, John and Teresa Maybrer.
How to Find, Preserve, Care for, and Prepare the Wild Mushrooms.
Good book.
Yeah, it's
great.
And
the drying method is in there. And like I said, it's not hard, but if you do it wrong and you put them up, you're going to mold all your batch, and why waste them?
I don't want to do that. If it's hard enough to find them some years, I hate to waste them.
Yeah, well, we've not had very good years either.
No, the last couple of been terrible.
Oh, unbelievable.
Now, we're in a cycle. This is the year of the five-year cycle from 1993 when the Midwest had the largest batch of mushrooms ever because of the flooding. People couldn't pick them and eat them because they were full of sand. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I remember it really well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there were so many mushrooms in the environment that every 5 years since then has been a decent year for finding morels, and we're in that cycle this year.
Oh, cool.
And believe it or not, as screwball as this weather pattern is, it's been kind of nice because it's brought the ground up, warming up more slowly. We're just getting the dogwoods blooming in the woods, and the tree buds, you know, we're primarily oaks down here, but there are a lot of elms and ash, which are really good because they're dying right now pretty good all over. And the trees are just now starting to green up. So, like I said, my nephew was out yesterday. He said he didn't see anything, but I got a brother down in southern Missouri down by Roaring River. He found black and half caps just this past week, and Kansas City is always about 10 days behind that.
Okay, so we still got time. All right, well, that's
news. We're in good shape. If it doesn't happen till the third week of April, that's a good thing because that means you'll have a longer picking season and you'll get more varieties. And always keep in mind, they'll start on the south-facing hills first, then they'll be on the west-facing hills, and then the east, and then the north. So you've got all of those ranges, and having this variety of weather will produce different varieties on the different sides of the hills, maybe all on the same day.
Wow, that's cool. Last time we had you on, we were talking about the elephant ears.
The reds.
Yeah.
Red ones. And you kind of leaned toward the side, don't eat those things. I mean, what's your thought on that again?
Well, the scientific report is that the geomicras, the brain-shaped red ones that come out closer to the water or closer to the wetlands before morels, they have monomethylhydrazine in them. Took me a long time to learn to say the
word.
Yeah,
no kidding.
I'm working on it.
But it's a degree off of jet fuel, and none of us needs to be ingesting jet fuel.
Whoa.
It is so potent that Toyota has studied it to see if they can make a fuel with it.
Whoa.
And they will grow fast. So it would have been nice if that could have happened, but it's not happening.
Hmm.
But it accumulates in your liver. So some people can get sick from them the first time they eat them. And you can eat them, I've got friends who've eaten them their whole lives, but their whole lives typically end in their 60s, and they just say, oh, it runs in the family. Well, yeah, because the whole family ate them.
Hey, 60 is a good number if you got to go out. I mean, my goodness.
No, I'm 63. I'll be 63 next month. It's not a good number.
No, that's very young now from our perspective.
I got a lot of living yet to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty scary. You know, I've eaten some of those before, and I've heard that some people say they're poisonous and others don't, and I know people that have eaten them for many, many years. But
yeah. I got buddies eating them. He said, I don't believe that at all. I've been eating them for years and years and years.
Well,
I always tell them, you know, if you've been eating them for years and you have all that confidence, go right ahead.
Yeah, really.
But if in your 60s you start having liver problems, tell the doctors you've eaten monomethylhydrazine your whole life.
Dang.
Now, what's that word again?
Monomethylhydrazine. Hey, I said that.
Did you?
Monomethylhydrazine.
You did say it.
How'd you do that, Toby?
I don't know. I'm like a parrot. I can be
but it's in the book. They can take the book with them and say, I did this.
Again, the book is available where?
Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. You can look it up at pretty much anywhere. And some libraries have it. Now the national parks north of I-70 are carrying it.
If a beginner is going out and wants to hunt morels for the first time, what kind of areas should they look for to start hunting?
Well, I always tell people the easiest way to know if they're up is to go out to a mixed woods where you see light bark trees, not the dark ones with the gnarly tops. Those are primarily your walnuts, oak, and hickories. They're not common in those except down here where they've had to adapt where that's all the woods are. But around the Kansas City area, the light bark trees are better producers. Your sycamores, cottonwoods, maple trees, they love the elm and ash because they're always dying. And then stand still in front of a tree that's wilting, not getting other trees are, and take time to just let your brain relax and look. And hit 4 or 5 of those. If you don't see anything in 20 minutes, either go to a different woods or wait a day or two. They're just not there yet.
Teresa, we're out of radio time.
Unfortunately.
Awesome.
But one more time, how can people get your book? What is the name of it?
It's Morel Hunting, John and Teresa Maybrier.
Well, I've got a copy of it. I highly recommend it. Anybody that mushrooms hunt, don't care if you're an expert or not, get this book. You will absolutely love it.
Teresa,
there's
thank you.
Lots of good common sense kind of stuff in it.
Yeah. Thank you for getting up and joining us.
Yeah,
oh,
Teresa, you are the best.
Have a great day. Happy hunting, everybody.
Thanks, Teresa.
Right. Hey, turkey hunters, beware of mushroom hunters. Mushroom hunters, beware of turkey hunters.
Exactly.
You got that right.
That's right. So,
okay,
what,
Teresa.
What a nice.
All right, be safe. Bye.
Hey, by the way, I've got some crappie with your name on it if you'll save me a few mushrooms.
I'll do it.
Fair trade.
All right. Yeah. See you soon.
Well, that wraps it up, but we're about out of time. But I just I talked to you briefly before we started on the air. A gentleman, a friend of mine, bought a new Silverado pickup from Reed Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
The most professional experience of his life. Said these guys had him laughing and giggling. There's non-commissioned salespeople.
How often does that happen when you go to buy a car?
He went to 3 different dealerships, $3,100 cheaper. Duh. You know, my goodness. So if you guys are in the mood, who isn't, to buy a Silverado brand new, you like that smell?
Oh, I know, yeah. New boat smell, new car smell. Yeah. Can't beat it.
Reed Chevrolet, Frederick Avenue, St. Joseph, Missouri.
Non-commissioned salespeople, you will love the Reed experience.
Get some Wampa Bug, guys, if you're going out turkey hunting.
Oh, no kidding. And this is the best. It's an all-natural repellent. And you can get it at all the Westlake hardwares around town and most garden centers. But if you're going out, you actually sprayed the ground.
Oh, yeah. I can't use enough of it. And it's biodegradable. You don't worry about putting no DEET, you know, no nothing on the thing.
Yeah, keep the ticks and mosquitoes away from
you. Kelly was over and came home with a tick.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to happen.
Part of it, so.
Don't forget that name, Whoop-a-Bug, and get up. Yeah, spray it wherever you go to sit.
Greatest stuff in America.
Yeah, you can actually drink this stuff. Yeah. It's got a peppery, but.
Got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in the great outdoors.
Have a good week. So long, everybody.